What's up, and welcome to episode 77 of the Jake Talk Sports Podcast. We are back, finally. It's been a while, but here we are, and I have a very special guest with me today to help break in the new episode. I am here with Mr. J-Pow NFL, Jackson Powers. How are we doing, man?
I'm doing great. Just got my new Royal Throwback Woolen jersey in the mail.
Okay.
So I figured I had to rock it on this episode. Other than that, yeah, doing pretty good. Just getting ready to head off to college pretty soon.
Good stuff. Where are you going?
I'm going to Seattle Pacific.
Okay. So, sick.
Yeah. I'm heading up home of the Hawks, and my dad he's splitting season tickets with his buddy, so I'm gonna be going to a couple games this year.
It's good to hear.
Yeah,
it'll be fun. But yeah, we're going to talk a little bit about the Seahawks and talk about some record predictions, some stat line predictions for them, some camp standouts, preseason week one standouts. Haven't played their second game yet, obviously. But the first question I have for you, I didn't watch the first game, but I do have a very special connection to the man who started for the Seahawks.
So I have
to know, how did Drew Lock play? I did not hear good things.
No, it wasn't bad. I would not categorize it as bad. There was some good, and there was some stuff to forget, but he had kind of weird pocket movement. There were a couple weird decisions. He had a really bad pick at one point. But all in all, I would say it was good. I definitely don't foresee him taking the starting job away from Geno anytime soon. But yeah, I would not say that he played horrible, but then again, I can't access all 22 for this game quite yet, so I haven't seen the full in-depth look at him, but just from watching the game, I thought he looked pretty solid. There was definitely some stuff to be worried about, but all in all, I liked what I saw.
Okay, good. I like to hear that, obviously. But as we know, Geno Smith is going to be the starter in Seattle this year, so let's start off talking about him, okay? Because this year is one that, for a quarterback like Geno Smith, is pretty vital because he just got paid, and let's be real, I mean, last year was the only good season of his NFL career. So, realistically, what do you expect out of Geno Smith this year? And do you expect him to duplicate what he did last year, or do you expect regression or maybe even improvement?
I actually think he is going to be better than he was last year because so much of what he was doing did not suggest that he was a one-year wonder, right? You look at a bunch of one-year wonder quarterbacks, and a lot of it comes from very gimmicky offenses where the quarterback doesn't really have to do anything super difficult, and it relies a lot more on the supporting cast of the rest of the offense. That was not the case with Geno last year. They were running a lot of empty with him. He was forced to kind of make his own reads. They did a lot of very difficult concepts with him. He was the most accurate quarterback throwing the ball deep. And there's just so much that he was doing at a high difficulty that really suggests this is not going to be someone who only stays relevant for one season. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I say he's going to improve is the Hawks sort of fell off the rails a little bit towards the end of last season offensively. Some of that was on Geno for sure, and some of that was on the rest of the offense. Sure. They're retaining pretty much every major starter, and they went out and added two very valuable roles. They finally got a receiver who can operate in the middle part of the field, Jaxon Smith-Njigba. He's going to be a very valuable sort of safety blanket role for Geno. And now they have a running back who can actually take it consistently between the tackles in Zach Charbonnet. And so I think that this offense really only got better considering so much of it stayed the same and you added some pretty expensive pieces. I don't really see a major, major path for regression. I feel pretty comfortably saying that Geno is going to be the same player that he was last year and is going to put more on the stat sheet with how much the offense has improved.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about the running back room now that you bring up like Charbonnet. Now, it's banged up as Seattle's RB room tends to be. I believe everybody's hurt at the moment, right? Like most of like your starters are.
Yeah,
right?
Walker just got back today, okay. I think. Charbonnet played in the preseason game, so Charbonnet's been fine. Okay. But yeah, McIntosh is down, and I think DJ Dallas is healthy, but apparently everyone should be ready by week one.
Okay. Okay.
So injury wise, I'm not too concerned, but yeah, there has been a lot of banged up guys in camp.
If you had your choice, would you prefer that Seattle run this thing by committee this year, or they outright make Kenneth Walker or maybe even Charbonnet the main guy and have the other dude kind of bouncing in and out a few plays a drive?
I think it should be pretty much a 50-50 split between the two. I mean, as good as Walker is as a big play guy, there really is very few nuances with him between the tackles. There's a lot of times where there's holes available and he just dances a little bit too much. He's not super north to south, but he's going to create big plays for you. He's going to make guys miss in the open field. He's going to break tackles. Enter Zach Charbonnet. He's the exact opposite. He's someone that you can consistently rely on to take the right hole. He's going to bowl guys over as opposed to kind of beating them with his electric speed. I think that these two guys complement each other so well, and they're both very good running backs that I would really hate to see one of them kind of wither away on the bench. I really do think both of them should be getting at least close to equal usage. If you want to favor one over the other just a little bit, make it more of like a 65-35 type split. I'm okay with that, but I think both guys are too good to not be a significant part of the offense. So I would go a much more committee-based attack.
Yeah, and even like, I mean, the depth is good there too. I mean, Kenny McIntosh isn't terrible, and
yeah,
DJ Dallas, I don't know about him, but I mean, I don't think he's like the worst running back in the NFL. So
no,
I mean,
yeah, he's probably going to be slated at fourth on the depth chart. McIntosh has apparently looked really good in camp.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if he gets a little bit of run, but I think Dallas is going to be more of like a special teams type of player than an actual guy getting carries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but obviously I think there's a lot of hope in this offense. A lot of that stems from the receiver room.
Oh yeah.
I'm a big JSN fan. I know you're a big JSN fan. I know in the mock draft that we did on this podcast right before the draft, you had the Seahawks taking him at 20.
They did
that. And so what do you think his role is going to be in this offense? Because Tyler Lockett and DK are obviously probably going to end up being the wide receiver 1 and 2. I mean, JSN, I think, certainly could pass up Lockett for the wide receiver 2 spot, but I don't know. I'm just curious and interested to see what a guy like JSN's going to do in this offense that kind of features two predominantly deep threat guys.
Yeah, absolutely. I have kind of struggled with that a little bit during the offseason. There's been times where I'm thinking, you know, it's very possible that JSN outproduces one of the two guys, but when I really think about it, I do think the most likely scenario is that he is the true wide receiver 3 on this offense. He's going to be working in areas that Lockett and DK don't really do. Like you said, both of them are deep threats, particularly Lockett. You're not really seeing him work over the middle of the field as much. He's more a 9 route guy along the sideline or separating in zone coverage by settling. And then DK is kind of similar. He's someone that you can put deep over the middle of the field, but they're not really creating yardage on a deep cross or anything like that. I think that's exactly where JSN is going to come to play. He's a great counterpart to the two of those guys. He's not super electric like they are, but he's going to put up a ton of production. I think he's going to do almost like a Walmart Cooper Kupp role on this offense, where he's going to be working really well in zone. He'll make some plays after the catch. I would not be surprised if all three of our receivers are 1,000 yard guys this year, or at least very close to it. But I do think that JSN is going to be the third guy on this offense. He's just going to be getting really, really legit work where DK and Lockett kind of fail to to get that.
Just out of curiosity, I don't think we've really talked about this. Where do you rank DK among receivers?
Probably 15-ish.
Okay.
Yeah, I think DK, because I would put, yeah, I would say right around there. I would have to actually like make, it would take me too long to actually make a list to where, but I would say right around the, like just outside the top 10. He could be a legit honorable mention for my top 10.
No, yeah, I would agree with that. And I think this offense is going to be so fun this year. But the one, obviously the one skill position group that you might not be as confident in is the tight ends, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't hate them, but they were getting a ton of usage at the beginning of the season. Fant, Disley, and Parkinson. Gino was finding them really consistently. And then by the end of the year, they were almost phased out of the offense. And I think Carroll's going to be more concerned with the run blocking element of this group than anything. And that's kind of where I fear about Fant. I thought that there was a very good chance that if Seattle was trading their picks or moving something around, I would not have been surprised if Fant was involved in a deal, because when Seattle made the Russell Wilson trade, they picked up Fant's option before he played a snap, and he looked pretty valuable early on, but then really didn't contribute hardly anything towards the end of the year. And I think maybe they almost make him like a pseudo fourth receiver. I wouldn't be surprised if that happens. But I think guys like Disley and Colby Parkinson are going to be very valuable to the running part of our offense, because they're really, really strong blockers. And they offer a suffice amount in the passing game, but they aren't, you know, the Travis Kelce or Mark Andrews of the league, where they're really going to be premier creators. But I think that given it's not filled with like super high end names, I'm kind of okay with it being phased out of the offense a little more than a bunch of the other positions. But you know, it's certainly not a group filled with star power.
Yeah, and I guess it really depends on how much you value having like an elite tight end when it comes to like trying to win the Super Bowl. Because obviously a lot of the teams we've seen win the Super Bowl recently have had, you know, or be in it, have had like an elite tight end. But those guys also didn't have like the wide receiver trio that like the Bengals have had, or like now the Seahawks have, right?
Absolutely.
So definitely, and that's part of the reason why you draft JSN, right? Is because he can fill a tight end's little safety blanket role and be a very good option in that sense in the short game. I was a huge Noah Fant guy when he first came into the league. Obviously, the Broncos didn't value him too highly. The Seahawks don't seem to. I think that it could be a decent room. It's just that's the one like skill position group on offense where you look at it and you're like, I'm not sure if there's anything there, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And then rounding off talking about the offense, talking about these positional groups here, how do you feel about the O-line?
I don't feel bad about it, but I don't quite know how good to feel about it, if that makes sense. My guess would be they're pretty average, but it's really hard to project where Cross and Lucas are going to be this year.
They were like phenomenal last year.
They were phenomenal for rookies. They, in terms of legitimate tackle play, they were sort of middle of the pack.
Yeah.
And they offered some reasons for concern, especially Cross by the end of last season. So I don't really know what year two is going to look like for them. Interior offensive line, I think, will be average to just below average.
Is Olu going to start, or is he?
So Evan Brown has been taking, I think, most of the first team reps in training camp, but Oluolu like grossly outplayed him during the preseason game. So I would predict that he is, and that's who I'm rooting for to start. But I think the only surefire starter right now is Damian Lewis at the left guard spot. My guess would be to round out the other parts of the interior offensive line, it would be Oluolu at center and Phil Haynes at right guard. But I don't really know, because there's still so many moving pieces that I can't really determine how I feel about the offensive line until we head into the year, just because there's so much projection involved with it. I don't really have any concrete ability to predict that, I don't think.
Flipping sides of the ball, going to the other side of the trenches here, the D-line is certainly something that, I mean, I've seen you on Twitter consistently not feeling great about the interior, especially. Draymond Jones is a good pickup. Don't know how much he moves the needle for you personally, but what do you think about this defensive line? What do you expect out of them?
In terms of Jones, I like it. When I watched the tape, my conclusion was that his contract is, he doesn't quite his final days in Denver didn't quite play up to the money he's getting, but in an ascending role, there's absolutely a world where he outplays that type of money because he's only, I want to say 26. Like, he's still very young. He's an ascending player and didn't get a very major role in run defense when he was in Denver, but it was very clear that when he was in there, he deserved more snaps than he was getting in that realm just because Denver's defensive line was really, really deep at the beginning of last year.
Right.
That was before, you know, they traded Chubb and got rid of Draymond and everything. They had a really solid defensive line, and he was more taking pass rush snaps more than anything. But come to Seattle, he is the headline of the interior defensive line position. He's going to be getting as many snaps as he can possibly sustain. And I do like what I saw out of him in run defense, but again, it's similar to Cross and Lucas. There's just a good amount of projection with him where I'm not really comfortable making a concrete take on how he's going to do.
Yep.
I think in our 3-4, I'm comfortable with the starting three in Draymond Jones, Mario Edwards, and it will be Brian Monet when he's back at the nose tackle. As of right now, it's Jaron Reed, which kind of scares me a little bit, but that should only be pretty temporary. It should be Brian Monet when he's back. The depth of this group is really what scares me because you've got Cam Young, who has been by far the biggest low light of training camp, and the track record with rookie nose tackles is very poor.
Yeah.
And then you have Mike Morris, who was kind of an edge semi-hybrid interior guy that Seattle has been beefing up to play more of an interior position, like a three technique ish somewhere right around there. And he's a good project for sure to take in the fifth round. But if you're forcing him to be taking significant snaps right away, there's a really, really low floor there. And then the other guy is Miles Adams, who has hardly played, has looked good. But I think the depth is where I'm really worried. And they're going to be rotating guys in and out. So all six of those guys are going to be getting run. And I just kind of worry about that. I feel like the back end of our interior defensive line could look really, really rough. But, you know, they looked really good in the preseason game. They made the schematic adjustments that I really wanted them to do, which is to run more five-man fronts as opposed to four-man fronts, especially in their nickel package. But, yeah, I'm comfortable, I guess, with the starting three, and I'm really, really worried about the depth.
Yeah, that's something that definitely – because – I don't know. I feel like Seattle could definitely find their downfall in their defense this season.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Just because they remind me a lot of the Lions in like the sense that like, their offense is going to be super, super good and there's a ton of talent there and they could score like a ton of points, but their defense is going to like pretty much make them have to go into these shootouts and stuff. I don't know if their defense is quite as bad to the extent that the Lions defense has been in these past couple of years when they were getting in these shootouts and stuff. Like, I think they actually, like, Seattle was one of those games where they were in, like, a really heavy shootout.
And had to outlast somebody.
But looking at their linebackers here, they're interesting. Because Bobby Wagner... Absolutely. I don't know how you feel about him currently, but I know there's a lot of discourse about him and his aging, his declining athleticism, but he wasn't like unstartable for the Rams, right? Like he was like a starter. He was solidified. He was good still. Seattle, I think bringing him back is a good move, but you look at the depth of this place of this unit and like Devin Bush, I know you've been watching him, so maybe you can provide some insight on him, but like, I don't like the depth. I don't necessarily have too much confidence in the starters. So what do you see in this linebacker core? What can you at least project out of them, if you can?
Well, the guy you have to mention when talking about Seattle linebackers is Jordan Brooks. Coming off of – he just got activated off the PUP list and is still getting into season shape. So he should be playing by week one. But his role is likely going to be semi-limited until we get deeper into the season. But I love Brooks. I'm a little bit concerned how he's going to return off that ACL. But given the speed of his recovery, he tore it in, I want to say, week 17, and is now going to play every game of the season. That is a 7.5-month recovery off an ACL tear, which is unprecedented.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, it goes to show the miracles of modern medicine.
I suppose,
but But when Brooks is fully healthy, he's such a guy in both the run and in coverage, and is going to be super valuable for us. And then the biggest question is who's going to start alongside him. You mentioned Bobby. I think Bobby would be a pretty solid counterpart to him because, like you said, he was not unstartable with the Rams. He was pretty good in the role that he was playing. The thing was that the role he was playing was super limited and put a lot of stress on the guy next to him. And I feel pretty comfortable that Brooks could handle that. But Bobby is, he's a good tackler. He can get downhill and rush the passer, makes a really nice addition for blitz packages and stuff like that. And so I think he'll be used like that, but he really, he has been his whole career, but now that he's as old as he is super limited in coverage. You really, you can have him almost as like a quarterback spy in coverage where he's just standing in the middle of the field, watching the quarterback's eyes. You can have him cover the guy in the flat, but that's about it because his sideline to sideline mobility is just gone at this point in his career. But you know, Devin Bush, I've been, you know, talking about him on Twitter a ton more than any other player recently, because I was really interested to see how he did. When I watched that preseason game, just on the broadcast angle, I thought he looked so bad. I thought he looked like almost unrosterable. And then I turned on the tape and it was a completely different story. And I have no idea why that I hated him so much in that preseason game, but I certainly still found some flaws in his game, but he's a lot more rangy than Wagner. He doesn't look super sure-footed yet, but he was very patient yet was still able to blow up a couple plays in the run. There were a couple really, really solid plays out of him in coverage to the point where I think when Brooks is playing at the level that Jordan Brooks has been playing, when he's fully healthy, I think Bush should start alongside of him as opposed to Bobby Wagner. And I do think both of them should get run depending on the situation, but I would feel a lot more comfortable with Bush hanging in coverage alongside Brooks, especially Brooks coming off of an ACL tear where you're not totally sure what type of form he's going to return to. I think Bush should be the guy alongside. He's kind of small, but he's not taking on contact super well, but very, very smooth in coverage, finds ways to get through the gaps and plug up runs at a really high level. I really did like what I saw out of Bush. But after those three, everyone looked completely unrosterable. Those are the only three NFL linebackers that we have on our roster right now. I feel really comfortable saying that John Rattigan should get cut. Maybe they keep him for special teams purposes, but that guy cannot play the linebacker position. Vi Jones, when he gets healthy, you're going to need him to take a serious step up if he's going to make this roster. But yeah, I think those three, I feel a lot better about them than I did at the beginning of this season. But yeah, that's where I'm at with the linebacker core right now.
Yeah, where do you stand on Mafe and Nwosu?
So Nwosu is going to start 100%.
Yeah.
I think they're going to rotate whoever it is out with Daryl Taylor. Daryl Taylor is going to be the guy who comes in on third downs, dime packages, any clear passing situation because he's a great pass rusher. He just can't set an edge to save his life. But he recorded 9.5 sacks last year, despite having like one of the most limited roles of any defense. I have to imagine that he was really high up there in terms of sacks per snap because he was just, he got almost double digit sacks and was hardly playing at all throughout the entirety of the year. But my guess is the true starter alongside of Nwosu is going to be Mafe. He did not look great his rookie year, and I thought given how low of a ceiling I thought of him when he was coming out of college, I sort of wrote him off and thought for sure that it would be Derek Hall, who has looked good. But according to all reports in training camp, Mafe has been the most improved guy, and Pete Carroll was the one who said that. I think there were a couple times – I tweeted one play about him where he set the edge and absolutely blew up the run. But there is a lot with Mafe that I really do like. I'm a little bit concerned with him as a pass rusher, but I'm willing to take his projection and run defense right now on the starting lineup alongside Nwosu. I think that it's going to be those two plus Daryl Taylor subbing in on passing downs. Maybe Derek Hall gets a little bit of run, but those are going to be the main snap getters, I guess.
All right, well, obviously there is some hope in the linebacker core. It's not like terrible. It's
yeah.
not like you're going to sit there and just be like, oh, this will cost us football games. And then finally rounding out this defense, and I'm not talking about all these units with the secondary. Obviously, you know, Tariq Woolen is fantastic.
And oh, yeah.
Wearing the jersey. And Devon Witherspoon, I don't know if I would have picked him where they picked him. That's just me.
Yeah.
We can talk about your thoughts on that if you'd like. But just absolutely. In general, I don't know how I feel about that. The more I looked at it and the more, like, Miller talked me into it a little bit because of just the way that Witherspoon plays kind of really fits what Pete Carroll wants in a quarterback and everything.
Yeah.
However, they easily, in my opinion, could have traded back and still gotten. I don't know.
See, that's where I disagree because the report was Seattle wanted, they were taking calls to trade back, but they ended up not trading back because if they had gone back, Detroit would have snagged him at 6 instead of trading back with Arizona.
Oh, okay.
So, that's where I was on that exact same track until I heard that. But yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that was what I heard. I don't know if it's true or not, but that was the report that I saw.
Yeah, but obviously those two guys are going to be great. And
for sure.
The thing that really does worry me, maybe you have some more insight on this, is I don't like the depth at all. I don't think that. I mean, obviously, like, I don't think Trey Brown's terrible, and I don't know much about Michael Jackson, but, like, just looking at these guys, I'm not really too convinced that it's going to be okay, especially if one of Tariq Woolen or Devon Witherspoon goes down with an injury.
Yeah, I actually do feel pretty comfortable with the depth right now. Woolen is someone that I think this season he's going to make the jump into the conversation of best cornerback in all of football.
Wow.
Because in terms of starters, there really is no one with the physical profile that Woolen has. 4.2 40, 6'4", super long arms, great frame.
Huge.
There's
vertical,
no one with
that.
Like he's like lab made for the build of a cornerback. And he fell all the way. Like there was a ton of talk about him being like a second round guy. And he fell all the way to the 5th round because he was a converted receiver, hence why he has such great ball skills. He was a converted receiver, and his tape was, like, disgustingly bad. Like, there was no cornerback in all of college football that looked as bad as Woolen did. But he's, like, a solid athletic project to take a gamble on. That's why he fell all the way to the 5th round. And when I did my team preview series with Miller, I basically said, like, I like the idea of, like, an investment on Woolen, but he's not going to contribute anything major snap-wise until probably at least 2 years into his career. And here we are, and he was, like, this close to winning Defensive Rookie of the Year behind Sauce Gardner, who had
an
all-time level season for a rookie cornerback. I really do think that another year under his belt where he gets to be alongside Carroll – gets to be kind of coached up. I think that once he kind of corrects those nuances, particularly in zone coverage, I think that there's going to be very, very few guys in the league better than him. And I do think his discourse is pretty bad right now because there's a lot of people who just look at the interception total and think he's this like speed demon Trayvon Diggs. And that's really not true because he can go out and like shadow guys. He was absolutely locked down in man coverage, shadow Devontae Adams in the Raiders game. There's so much about Woolen that I love. And I think with another offseason under Carroll, he is going to make that jump. In terms of Witherspoon, pre-draft, I don't think you're going to find very many people on Twitter who were lower on Witherspoon than I was. I was very, very critical.
Yeah, you did not like him. Yeah.
The more I have talked myself into it, the more I understand the fit. And one of the fits is Seattle's cornerbacks were pretty much like null and void in run defense. Woolen and Mike Jackson both got really heavily washed out, and you can see that be made pretty clear if you watch the tape on our wild card game against San Francisco, where there were just tons of big runs by McCaffrey and Debo and all of their weapons, where our cornerbacks are just like washed out of the play. The ability to have a nickel cornerback who can cover as well as Witherspoon does and still take on contact at the second level and make legitimate plays in the run is so, so valuable. And it was something that our team really needed. So I really understand that fit there. And while I do like Christian Gonzalez a lot more as a cornerback, he is not adding the same fit that Witherspoon is. So I definitely get it a little bit. And at this point, I kind of just trust Pete Carroll entirely with the cornerback position, given how many guys he's just turned into stars, like Richard Sherman, Tariq Woolen, Shaquille Griffin. There's just so many guys. And those are all like late round picks. If he's willing to spend the fifth overall pick on one, I can only imagine what Carroll is envisioning right now. So I've kind of decided to, I'm going to shut up and let the smart people work right there. But, Mike Jackson, I actually do really like. He has also been someone who has made a ton of plays in training camp. And my guess as to how this defense looks is Woolen is going to be the right cornerback and is going to stay there full time. In base downs, it's going to be Witherspoon as the left cornerback. And then when we go into our nickel formation, Witherspoon's going to be kicked to the inside. And then Mike Jackson is going to be the left cornerback on the outside. And Jackson last year was like a formidable cornerback too. He was nothing special alongside Woolen. But you know, he's really good depth to have as your cornerback three. And with how many reports that he's taken a ton of jumps this year, I really actually love what we're getting out of this group. I think our defense has a decently high floor just because of the sex appeal of our secondary. Because, you know, if Witherspoon is projecting at the level that Woolen was last year and Woolen is playing at the level that I think he could play at this year, and the reports are true about Mike Jackson being one of the most improved players in all of camp, that could be a really, really scary secondary. Not to mention Quandre Jamal and Julian Love, who we just grabbed out of New York. There's, I think this is like easily our strongest group on defense. I love our secondary right now.
Yeah. Jamal Adams obviously has been out for, I don't even remember how long at this point. Yeah. I can't remember the last time he played football. Yeah. I remember earlier in the offseason, there was an article that came out about the potential of, with his injury, him just straight up not playing football ever again. Is that like really that much of a possibility at this point? Or is he
that was
seemingly on track?
So it sounds like he's a lot more on track than I was hoping. I do think when he comes back, he will never be like close to his former self.
No.
And that was something I had posted where like the return rate for players. So his injury was he tore his quadriceps tendon, and the return rate with his injury is like incredibly low. And guys who do return tend to be like a shell of themselves when they get back. But Carroll basically came out and said him and Brooks are 100%. And then a couple days later, Brooks got activated off of PUP. And it looked like Brooks, like if you look at their like rehab and recovery videos, it looked like Brooks was making a lot more progress than Adams was, given like he tore his week one, has still yet to be activated. Brooks tore his on the second to last game of the season, and he's going to play week one now. But I do think Adams plays, just given like the reports that have been coming out of camp. It seems like he is pretty much done rehab wise and just needs to get back into football shape. But I think at minimum, like his side to side ability is going to be a lot worse. And I'm not totally sure what role he is going to be in once they bring him back. But I do feel a little bit less afraid of that possibility by now.
So, obviously, Jamal Adams probably won't play week one. So, just looking at these safeties and the guys who are going to step up in his place, how do you feel about the safety room? I don't know where you stand in Quandre. I know he's a big discourse guy in Seattle. But, yeah, how do you feel?
I did not love what I saw out of Quandre last year. And that was the – like, there was – I thought for sure that there was no way I'd ever say that, given his recent tenures. Yeah, I mean, he's a great ball hawk, but – there's plenty of times where his over-aggressiveness is pulling him away from where he needs to be and gives up big plays. There were multiple instances of that in the Raiders game. You could probably chalk up the loss to Quandre Diggs in that Raiders game. There was one where Seattle was playing cover two, I believe it was. He's the high safety on the right side. And there's a running back running a wheel route. And so he starts off in the flat. Quandre comes down to the flat to try and pick the ball off. And then the running back turns the wheel, burns him along the sideline, and scores like a 30-yard touchdown. And then there was another play where I want to say, I don't remember if it was Brooks or Barton, but it was another cover two look. One of them was in the middle of the field, and Quandre was the high safety on the right side again, and it was Foster Moreau running a corner route.
Yep.
And it's coming into Quandre's zone, and Quandre is just staring directly at the quarterback and, like, does not see the route coming to his zone. So Brooks is – I think it was Brooks. He used to be pulled from the middle of the field to come take this crosser route, and he had just had no chance of stopping it. And that was the touchdown that sent the game to overtime, which the Raiders eventually won. But there's just – there was a lot from Quandre that I really, really did not like last season. But I do like where this group stands otherwise. They drafted Jarek Reed in the sixth round, who's going to be more of a special teams player than anything. But there is good – there's really good depth. Julian Love, who they signed out of the Giants, I think is going to be a pretty major part of this defense.
Yeah.
I think that – what's his name? Joey Blunt, he'll probably make the roster. There's a potential chance that something Sutherland – I think it was Jonathan Sutherland, who's been like our highlight undrafted free agent. He could make the roster. I really like the safety room, but my biggest concern for sure is Jamal. And I just – I think that Quandre – is not quite the anchor of this Seahawks defense like a lot of people make him out to be.
Going back, just a quick little side tangent. You mentioned you think Tariq Woolen has a chance to be one of the best corners in the NFL, if not the best. Just because this is such a big point of argument on Twitter and everything, and just in NFL spaces in general, who's your CB1
currently? Mine is Sauce. As much as it pains me to say it, because I hate his Twitter antics and how belittling he was of Wooling around the Pro Bowl season.
Yep.
But I do think it's Sauce, just because, like, he didn't have the same interception numbers, but he stuck to every receiver like glue, and the tandem of him and DJ is like that. That's crazy. I do have Sauce, right? I actually have Woolen at like 5 or 6. Right?
Yeah.
Like, I think that he's a couple spots out, but. Yeah, I think he makes a jump this year. Particularly where I want to see him improve is his zone coverage. But yeah, I think Woolen will. I think that's going to be a legitimate debate in future years, Sauce or Woolen.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he has the physical traits to do it. And like we said, like, people like discredit Woolen because he didn't win Defensive Rookie of the Year, but like, you got to look at who won it over him, right? I mean, Sauce had like one of the best rookie corner seasons, if not the best rookie corner season ever. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm a big fan of Woolen. I think I probably have him in the 5 to 10 range somewhere, for sure. I guess I don't know specifically where, but yeah, I mean, overall, now that we've kind of gone through all these units and stuff. Talking about some stat lines here and what you think they're going to look like. Okay, all right. Let's do some major ones, starting with Geno. What do you expect from Geno numbers-wise, your best projection?
I'm thinking – I really think Geno could shoot for the moon here. I'm thinking somewhere probably – I do think he's going to cross the 4,000 yards marker, probably between – excuse me – probably between 4,200 and 4,500 yards, probably 35 to 40 touchdowns, and okay. 8 to 9 picks, somewhere in there. I think that Geno is going to have a really, really sweet year with this offense.
Who do you think your leading receiver is going to be, and what do you think their stat line is going to look like?
That's a great question. I would have to say DK. I think he's going to be – I bet they're all within, like, 100 to 200 yards.
Oh, for sure. They're going to be so close.
My guess would be DK is the leader with like between 11 and 1200. And then I think Lockett will probably be second, just crossing the 1000 margin. And then JSN will probably be third, just short of the 1000 margin, where he's like 850 to 900 yards. And I bet in total they're catching, if Geno's throwing 35 touchdowns, they're probably catching 28 of those.
Between
the three of them.
Looking at the same question, but for the running backs, who do you think is going to end up being your leading rusher, and what do you think their stat line is going to look like?
I'm really torn between the two.
Yeah.
I think so. I bet they're pretty close in all-purpose yards. I do bet Walker is. I think Walker might have more rushing yards, and Charbonnet might have more all-purpose yards, because I think Charbonnet is going to get a little bit more involved in the receiving game than Walker has been. He's certainly going to be a better blocker.
Right.
I bet Charbonnet has more touchdowns than Walker does. But yeah, I would guess both of them are between 800-900 yards, somewhere around there, and then right around 1,000 all-purpose yards.
All right. Couple more Seahawks related things before we jump more into the general stuff. I know you don't have all 22 yet, but did you watch the first preseason game?
Yeah, I did.
Okay. So who is your biggest winner and who is your biggest loser from the first preseason game?
Biggest winner.
Can be
a rookie,
can be anybody, yeah.
Biggest winner, I would say, is undrafted free agent Levi Bell.
Okay.
To the point he played, he's an edge rusher. He played to the point where he went from kind of a nobody to a guy that has a very, very legitimate chance to make the roster. He's at like a 50-50 coin flip right now to make the roster. Looked really smooth as a pass rush. In the run, he was very boom or bust. There were a couple times he got completely washed out and a couple like legitimate stuffs that he made. I would say Levi Bell is the biggest winner. Biggest loser. That's a good question. I would have to say either John Rattigan or probably John Rattigan and the linebacker depth in general. Bush looked good, but pretty much every middle linebacker looked like you should not be on an NFL roster. So I'm not really going to narrow it down to one guy because Ben Burkervin, John Rattigan, like all of those guys, I would say are the losers.
Yeah. And then finally, as we kind of close off this whole Seattle segment, record prediction. What do you think? You need to give it your best guess.
I made my record prediction. Like, I made the playoff picker thing before preseason started. I had Seattle at 11-6.
Okay.
I could see them finishing with 9-10 wins. I could also see them finishing with 13. If everything is going right, we stay fully healthy. I think there is like a small chance that we're like the Eagles of last year. But that's kind of where I would put us. I think a solid like middle of the pack projection is 11 wins.
Yeah. Obviously you want to have faith in your own team, but how much faith do you have that they can like win the division at this point? I know it's hard with the Niners and Brock Purdy being named the starter. And we saw I don't like Brock Purdy that much, but we saw how good they could be with him. So it's going to be tough, but
if the Niners stay healthy, I would pretty strongly bet against us winning the division, but they're a team who has really been hit hard by the injury bug over the last few years.
Yep.
And there is a world where Purdy completely stinks it up. I would bet against it for sure, but I think that there is a universe where that happens. I have to imagine. Right now, I feel pretty comfortable saying that Seattle is going to sweep both Arizona and the Rams and get swept by San Fran when it comes to the divisional games, just because they match up against us so incredibly.
Yes.
But yeah, I would heavily, but I would say that we're a favorable wild card.
Yeah, especially with like the bottom half of your division just being like
just awful,
terrible. Yeah. Like the Rams defense, you guys are going to probably put up upwards of 50 points on them both games. The Cardinals are, we know what they are. They're the Cardinals. I talked about this a little bit in my record prediction for them, but I think the Cardinals defense could be surprisingly scrappy this year just because of Jonathan Gannon and some of the young talent they have. But still, I mean, you have four free wins in the bottom of your division pretty easily, both you and the Niners. But yeah, that can lead to a pretty favorable schedule for you. Moving off of Seattle and talking about some more general NFL stuff. Obviously we had a couple of running backs land in the AFC East over this past week. I will give you my take and I'll let you rip, but I don't know if you're going to agree with this, but I don't, like either of the deals, and I don't think either of them were necessary, and I think that they are both bad value contract-wise, and I don't understand either of them to much of an extent from the team's perspective. From the player's perspective, I understand Dalvin Cook because he wants a ring. I get it. Zeke, I don't know. I don't know what he thinks is going to come out of him being a New England Patriot. Maybe he just wants to play at Belichick. But in my opinion, my take is that they're both bad contracts, both unnecessary signings because of Ramondre and Breece Hall. I get it to an extent because Breece Hall is a second-year running back coming off of an ACL tear. But I like their running back depth a good bit with Michael Carter and Sonovan Knight. Like, I don't necessarily think that they needed to do this.
Yeah, I agree with you for the most part on the Dalvin contract, because I think Dalvin, a lot more so than Zeke, is really, really washed at this point in his career.
Yeah, sure.
I don't think that he's like, he looks a little bit skittish to take on contact, which he's always been more of a speed demon than like a true bulldozer through the A gap. But he looks like he's legitimately trying his best to avoid taking on like major contact when going up the middle.
Yeah.
I understand why they would want to add another back in the room, because I'm not a big Michael Carter guy, and I think Zonovan Knight is a lot more of like a cool name value guy than a legitimate RB1 option.
Oh yeah, no, yeah, for sure.
But like, so like I understand why they wanted to go out and help their running back depth. I don't think Dalvin's a horrible, horrible person to do that, because like pairing a veteran former stud behind a second year guy like Breece Hall, like that can do a lot for you.
Yeah.
When I saw that in action, it was when Seattle signed Adrian Peterson for like two games. And all of a sudden that's when Penny just went absolutely
crazy.
Nuclear. Yep. Yeah. So like I understand why they wanted to bring Dalvin into the building. The value is where I have trouble seeing it. And I think what happened is it's a one-year deal. They had $16 million of cap before the signing happened. And it's very clear that both parties wanted to reach an agreement. Like Dalvin had, I don't remember if it was one or two visits with the Jets, but after each visit, it was like, he's going to be on this.
He's going to be a Jet
later. Mm-hmm. And I think it was like, I think that from what I've seen out of all the Dalvin Cook stuff, I think that the agency wanted Dalvin to sign for like 10 to 11 million, which he's obviously not worth.
No.
And I'm sure that the Jets had a much lower AAV pinned on his back.
I'm sure.
But given it's a one-year deal and I understand what he's bringing to the team, I think the Jets kind of caved and said, all right, we'll pay you 8 million if you just come into the building now. And so I do really hate the Jets' value there, but I understand why they wanted to bring him in. I actually disagree with you a little bit on the Zeke contract. I kind of understand where that's adding value. Last year, Ramondre Stevenson really burst onto the scene, and a major, major reason for that is Damian Harris. I don't remember if he tore, I think it was a torn hamstring. He was out for most of the year. And Ramondre and Belichick both said, like, this is too much workload. Like, last season I had too much on my plate, and Belichick has been trying to give him some load management this season. Like, it's been very clear that the Patriots wanted to go out and add another running back alongside Ramondre. I fully believe that they would have picked Bijan if he was available to them.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so the thing with Elliott, I saw this on a video just the other day. I don't know. Do you follow Esquire Sports?
I think so. Yeah.
Yes. So Esquire Anthony, he's an incredible creator. He made a really great in-depth video on this the other day, where one of the major indicators between good and bad teams, like there's a huge correlation between this, is red zone success. And the Patriots were like dead last in the league last year, like right around there. And Ezekiel Elliott is the fourth highest success rate in the red zone among all running backs.
Okay.
So I really do understand the vision there. And for $6 million, like on a 1 year deal, I do like that signing. I've come around to it a little bit more in the past few days. He's going to take some off of Ramondre's plate, and it's obviously going to be that Ramondre's going to be the headline back, and Zeke is going to be, you know, pass blocking. He'll take some goal line snaps, stuff like that. But $6 million, I understand, like, it is a little bit high for a supplemental back like that, but I like what Zeke is adding, and given it's a 1 year deal, I'm willing to swallow that poor value. Like, I would have, mm-hmm. I would have made the same move, I think. Mm-hmm. If I was in Belichick's situation, I would have made that signing.
Yeah, I more just don't, maybe it's more that I don't understand it from Zeke's perspective.
I have to imagine it was just a highest bidder thing.
It must have been, just because I think he wants to, like, be a good, like, example of running backs getting paid. But, like, I feel like there's different situations. I don't know if he's necessarily at the point in his career where he needs to be ring chasing necessarily.
Right.
Because he's not, like, he's not as old as Dalvin, I don't believe. No.
No, Zeke is, like, 20. I don't remember how old Zeke is. No, yeah, he might be as old as Dalvin, actually, because he was a rookie of the year in, like, 2016. We're going into 2023 now, which would be his seventh season in the league, I think.
They're the exact same age. Yeah, it's crazy.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, so they're both 28. Okay, well, yeah. But yeah, like we talked about, Dalvin Cook is, I think, way worse off than Zeke is currently.
Right.
Just athletically and everything. Another little spinoff thing. Where do you see the Patriots being this year? There are people who legitimately believe they have a chance at finishing anywhere higher than fourth in the division. I don't buy that at all.
Yeah, I don't either.
I think they could be close to Miami, depending on Tua's health and depending on how that defense is. Mm-hmm. But, like, I don't see a world where they finish anywhere higher than fourth. But there are people who believe that because of Belichick and Mac Jones isn't that bad. And I don't know. But just what are your thoughts on them, and do you think that they can –
I think I could see a world where they finish third in the division, because I do think that their ceiling is higher than Miami's floor. And like, I could see them surpassing, but I don't think it's going to be a significant third in the division. Like, I don't see them competing for any kind of playoff contention or anything. If they finish third in that division, they would be like an 8-win team, like nothing really serious. But sure. I do think that they are going to be pretty mid this year. I do like the hiring of, what's his name? Their new offensive coordinator. Who
Bill O'Brien.
Bill O'Brien. Yeah. I do like that fit with Mac Jones. But the skilled position players are still a huge, huge weakness to me. I don't think that this offense is going to be great. There's a lot to look forward to on that defense. I think Christian Gonzalez under Bill Belichick is some serious fireworks to be looking out for. But all in all, as a team, I don't see them as a, like, any kind of legit contender in as stacked of an AFC as it is right now.
I don't either. No. And obviously, you know, Dalvin Cook doesn't move the needle too much for the Jets, but I mean, I don't know what your thoughts are, but I think they're legitimately probably going to win the Super Bowl. If I pick my favorite right now, I don't know. Rodgers is still as good as ever. And like, Garrett Wilson is insane.
Yeah.
That defense could be crazy. Like, Quinn and Williams.
I think that defense will be the best in the league. I'm willing to put them above San Francisco, because I think San Fran's the pretty consensus one right now. I would push against them winning the Super Bowl just because, like, the rest of that offense is outside of Wilson, Rodgers, and like, there's a very real chance Breece Hall's a shell of himself this year. Outside of those guys, it is a pretty weak offensive core, and I don't think Rodgers is at the point in his career where he can, like, Mahomes this offense to a Super
That's
Bowl.
True.
Like, I think there's a legitimate gap between, like, the Mahomes, Burrow, Allens of the world and where Rodgers is at age 38 or whatever he is.
Sure. I think they would definitely lose to somebody in the playoffs that just
Right. I think they will make a playoff run, but I don't see them – I think that there's a couple too many teams that they're going to have to go through in order to win the Super Bowl.
Yeah, and I think they do kind of make up for the lack of high-end talent in the receiver room by having Lazard and Cobb, just because those are guys that Rodgers trusts, and we've kind of seen that. Even if guys aren't the most talented guys, if Rodgers trusts them and likes them, he'll get them the ball. But they have no tight ends, and the offensive line is getting absolutely cooked in camp. I understand that their defenses and their defensive and their pass rush is insane. Like, Will McDonald has been good, and Quinn Williams is one of the best defensive tackles in the league, and they have Jermaine Johnson too, and everybody. I understand that, but like, their offensive line is like, Rodgers I don't know if you are a Hard Knocks viewer or if you
I actually just finished. I haven't watched the second episode yet, but I just finished the first episode right before.
There's a point in the second episode where it's just a 5-minute stretch of Rogers just being like just so angry and just so like frustrated with the offensive line because they just keep getting like wrecked in practice. And
yeah,
so that's something to be looking out for with them, and that's doesn't really bode well for a guy like Dalvin Cook. But yeah, that's the one big concern on offense for them. Just hopping into some general preseason talk, talking about leading into the season, some predictions and some good teams. The rookie QBs, all four of them, the big ones made a start, I believe. I don't know. Actually, will have a start against the Bears.
He got legit. I think he got a half. I think he got a half, and Willis got a half.
I don't know necessarily how much you've been keeping up with the preseason, but who do you think was the best rookie QB in the first week?
I would pretty comfortably say Richardson. He was my quarterback one in the class, and same. I got a good amount of hate for that. Mm-hmm. But I mean, he had that one really bad pick, but if you look at it,
you can see what he's trying to do.
Absolutely. Cause it was the guy that he was trying to throw to. I don't remember which receiver it was.
It's Paris Campbell.
So it was Paris Campbell. So the nickel cornerback was blitzing. And so Richardson set his feet. So Paris Campbell was running like a really short out route. Richardson set his feet thinking that Campbell would make the adjustment where he just runs a flat route instead of like taking a couple steps and running an out. So like you can see him plant his feet early, pump fake, because he was going to release that ball if it was there, but Campbell obviously didn't make that happen and then had to create on his legs and then tried to force it in that window again. And again, that is his fault because A, he should have thrown it away, and B, he threw it off a like horribly weird base.
Yeah, that's the one thing about him is I'm a little bit worried about how often
lower body mechanics are certainly an issue with him right now. But like the thing, like I tweeted this out the other day. I am so confused how he was not like the consensus quarterback one out of this class.
I don't know.
We've seen guys like Malik Willis and stuff like this get like legitimate hype for their physical, like freak of nature tendencies. And the thing is like, oh, did you leave? Oh, oh my God. Okay. Here we are. There we go. Okay. I tried to hold down the fort while you were gone. That caught me off guard a little bit.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. All right, continue.
But as I was going to say, Malik Willis, like he's someone that got a ton of hype for being just this absolute freak of nature at quarterback. Yet he didn't have anywhere near the poise or the pocket manipulation or even like the rushing ability that Richardson has. I don't understand how like his actual pocket passing abilities like flew where they were under everyone's radar. I don't understand it. But like, I mean, you saw him hit that corner route in the back of the end zone with ease. Mm-hmm. And then he almost hit that ball to Alec Pierce, which Pierce actually like brought into his chest and then hit the floor and the ball did not survive the landing. But I would pretty comfortably say Richardson was the number one guy. And I think we're going to continue to see that throughout the season.
Yeah, and like people are like, I really am against the whole like he should sit for Gardner Minshew narrative.
Yes, me too.
I don't think that like okay, if there was a solidified guy in Indianapolis who we know is good and we know can like functionally run an offense in the NFL, maybe Anthony Richardson sits. But with his upside and his ceiling. And especially the fact that, like, a guy like him just needs to play.
Yes.
Like, Malik Willis, a part of the reason why the Titans have soured on him so quickly is because he played in two NFL games, and he just needed to play more, right? And Richardson needs to play, and I think that he will be fine this year. Obviously, I think the guy who had – out of, like, the big three in Stroud, Young, and Richardson, I think Stroud had definitely the toughest – go in the first game.
Yeah,
really bad pick to Jalen Mills. You can see what he's trying to do, but he stares it down. Mills kind of cuts him off and takes it. Mm-hmm. I don't know where you had him ranked. I'm assuming QB3 behind Young and Stroud and ahead of Levis. But maybe you had him ahead of Young even. But Yeah,
I bounced around with it a little bit, but I think Stroud ended up finishing as my quarterback 2 over Young.
Yeah. I mean, how much confidence do you have in him this year? What do you think we're going to see?
If we're talking just this year, very, very little. I think that the transition from the Ohio State round, the fleet of first round draft picks around him at,
I mean, dude,
receiver, offensive line, everywhere, like going from that to throwing to Nico Collins and John Mechie, like,
and having that offensive line. Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, like, it's just a really rough transition to make. In terms of his future, I think Stroud could very easily be like a Geno type of guy where his first instinct is to throw from the pocket, but he has, like, he's no Mahomes once he gets outside of the pocket, but he has the necessary tools to semi-create if it needs to be done. Or like kind of like a Dak type of player, or even like a Jordan Love kind of guy. I think Jordan Love could be a guy like that. But this year I have very, very low expectations for him as a rookie, given like the track record with how rookie quarterbacks play is just very low. And he's in a really weird situation and is going far out of his comfort zone, I think, his rookie year with the Texans in terms of the transition from Ohio State to Houston. I think he's going to have a horrible rookie year, but that doesn't mean I'm writing him off for his chances at being a franchise quarterback for Houston.
Yeah. And then looking at Young, he hasn't really played much. I don't think they've even kept him in for a full drive yet in the preseason. From what we've seen, I think he'll be fine.
Yeah.
But I do think that I don't know. Like, the Jets defense gave him a really hard time. That's the Jets defense. I understand that that's kind of what Salah does and everything. But I don't know. I think the height is definitely a concern. Obviously, we've seen quarterbacks of his height be fine in the NFL. I think he's good, but I think his rookie season and the hype around him is a bit too much currently. I think he'll be a little bit worse this year than people are anticipating.
Yeah. I don't think they're going to. I think there was some stuff. He's playing right now, isn't he? Or there was a game that was like just happening, I think, where he was playing.
Them versus the Giants. 3 for 5 for 35 yards. Yeah.
Yeah, he had that one play that I was a fan of where he threw an incompletion but took the snap, pressure started to collapse in on him. He like fell down and then got up and evaded the pocket and like fired a dart long. That was something I was not really expecting from him, given he's not someone who really has the arm strength to get outside and play like a Kyler type of guy who, you know, doesn't have a ton of height but can make up for it with their like pretty awesome creation ability. I agree. I don't think he's going to have a great rookie year, especially throwing to this group of receivers, Adam Thielen, DJ Chark. Like, it's one of the worst cores in the league. I would pretty firmly bet that Richardson is going to be the best rookie quarterback.
I think so. I think so.
But yeah, Young, we've seen so little of him that I'm not going to make a legitimate judgment yet.
Yeah, not yet. But yeah, I mean, I think this is going to be an interesting class to watch. It's pretty rare that like three guys like this start all right away in week one. Moving into just to kind of round off the episode, just some more general like non-rookie type things. If you had to make a pick for a player that you think is bound for regression and a player that you think is bound to break out this season, who would your picks be for each of those?
That's a really good question. I had this pulled up when I was doing my team predictions with one of my other friends who was a podcast. I want to say for progression, I want to say Lawrence, but I almost feel like that's cheating because he broke out last year.
Yeah, sure.
Regression, I would say Keenan Allen is probably up there for me. There's definitely names that I'm blanking on, but I think he's so athletically gone at this point. Like, even as someone who's never thrived off of super high-end athleticism, I think that Keenan Allen is like washed enough to the point where he can't even rely on his smooth technical ability and his ability to kind of be nuanced in zone coverage, I think he's going to get kind of ran out of town pretty quickly, especially with the development of Quentin Johnson coming along.
Yeah.
There's definitely some names I'm missing on that front. Someone who I think is due for a breakout season. I don't even know. Oh, I'm going to go with Jalen Phillips out of Miami. I think he could be like a legitimate top 10 pass rusher. I really like his hand usage. His speed to power is really, really nice. And now that this team has, you know, Bradley Chubb, Christian Wilkins, like there's a lot more room for him to go out and get pressure. The coverage obviously is a lot nicer, even with Jalen Ramsey out until December. Mm. You have Cam Smith coming in, who I really liked. You have David Long holding up the middle of the field. Mm-hmm. I think there's just a major, like, the time is now for Jalen Phillips, I think, to become a complete. I think he could easily assert himself as a top 10 edge rusher.
Yeah, that's good. Last thing, the big one. If you had to make a sleeper Super Bowl winner pick right now.
Okay.
And then your legit one.
Like so you, my like, my legit one.
If you had to make your like gun to your head, you got to make your Super Bowl pick to, you know, it's the big bet right now. Who would it be?
I think so. I didn't. This is not actually what I predicted in my playoff picker thing.
Yeah.
I think my actual. So this is me changing it up right now. I think my Super Bowl pick is going to be the Cincinnati Bengals.
Okay.
So I think, you know, they started off really rough at the beginning of last season, losing that game to the Steelers week one. And then Joe Burrow went on a run towards the end of the regular season and the playoffs where he was like, I would call him like the smartest pocket passer in the league. So many of these guys who have just thrived off of creating explosives like Burrow did in 2021 have been forced to make the adjustment to playing against two high coverages. And I would say like, as great as Mahomes is, that's not a transition he's fully made, right? He's not as good of a pocket passer as he is a creation artist. Allen, I would say the exact same thing for. We kind of saw it out of him in week one, but we never really saw it after that. Burrow is someone who I think has legitimately mastered playing against single high coverage two high coverage. And while he doesn't have the incredible physical attributes like a lot of those other guys have, he does have the ability to create explosives, especially when playing alongside Jamar Chase, T. Higgins, Tyler Boyd. Like that offense, if you are sleeping on the deep ball, they're going to hit it very, very frequently. And that's exactly what the Bengals did in 2021. So I think Burrow, like with this offense, I really do think Burrow is going to have like an MVP caliber season. And then the defense I think is incredibly underrated right now. I think Dax Hill could end up being better than Jesse Bates in his last days in Cincinnati. I really, really love Dax Hill. I've done a couple, post a couple clips of him on Twitter. I love the pass rush. I really love the secondary. Like there's so many parts of this defense that I just think are super underrated. I think it's like, I think that they're a lot more balanced of a team than the Chiefs were last year. And I am very, very high on the Chiefs. I would take a slight quarterback down tier for an improvement on pretty much every other aspect of the team besides tight end, obviously. But yeah, I think the Bengals are my pick right now. Okay. If I really had to fire one off, and then my sleeper pick, I do really like the Jaguars this year.
My sleeper pick is the Ravens, just to give you a basis.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. I do love the Ravens this year. I actually have the Ravens winning the AFC North.
So do I.
Yeah, I had them. So I had the Ravens and the Jags finishing at the top of the AFC, each with a 14-3 record. I really like the Jags.
14-3 for Jacksonville, man.
14-3 for Jacksonville. So I think the mesh with Ridley is going to be really nice. I think that there's a lot to look forward to on that defense. I made a YouTube video on Trayvon Walker.
Yep.
I think he could be in for maybe not. This might not be his like breakout season, but I have to imagine that it goes better than his rookie year just because he was winning a ton off of just straight physicality. And there's so much of what he's doing right now that is, I think, going to come with time, like stringing counters together and play recognition and stuff like that. He's not quite great at, or at least wasn't in his rookie year. I think that's stuff that you're going to see improvement out of in 2023. I really like Tyson Campbell. Yeah, I think the Jags would be my Super Bowl sleeper. But don't be surprised if Seattle is that sleeper team in the NFC.
Honestly, yeah. I could see that.
Yeah. I think in the NFC would be Seattle, but I would bet a lot more heavily on the Jaguars winning the Super Bowl than Seattle. But yeah, I think my sleeper team is Jacksonville.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is all I've got for you. So awesome. Just wrapping up here, if you want to plug your socials and go ahead and do that.
Yeah, so I am at JPowNFL on pretty much every platform, TikTok, Twitter, YouTube. That would be at JPOWNFL. So that's my shameless plug right there.
Sweet. Love that. So yeah, be sure to go follow Jackson everywhere. Be sure to follow the podcast everywhere you can. Check us out on Spotify. Check me out on Twitter. Do all the good stuff there. Drake Talk Sports everywhere. Be sure to help grow the podcast in any way you can. And we will see you guys episode 78.